Well, what about wind power? Right now, wind generates just about 5% of the nation's energy, but the Department of Energy says it's on course to become the country's largest source of energy, generating 35% by 2050. Joining us now is Jeremy Firestone, professor in the School of Marine Science and Policy at the University of Delaware. He's also director of the school's Center for Carbon-Free Power Integration. Professor, welcome. And do you believe those numbers, that 35% of our energy will come from wind by the year 2050?
I think, if anything, it's probably conservative. If we look at the trends on prices, land-based wind is already, in many areas of the country, the cheapest new source of energy.
So where is it all going to come from? Where are the wind farms going to be? I've seen them in Texas. There's a huge wind farm there. There are other places in the country that have some big wind farms, but it doesn't seem like there are enough of them to be that much of the power.
Well, in some of our states already, Iowa gets about 28% of its energy from the wind. And this is not a red state or blue state thing. Falling just behind Iowa is South Dakota. So indeed, all of our states with increasing technology, improving technology, are going to see wind power. The turbines are much bigger, the blades are longer, and we're going to be able to put them at increasing height. All of those lead to both greater wind and greater energy capture.
Well, what is better for generating energy from wind, to have the turbines out in the ocean and have offshore wind projects, or to have them on land, or does it make a difference?
It doesn't make that much of a difference. I mean, the advantage of offshore is that the winds are generally stronger, more consistent. And during the summer, while the generation offshore is still less than it is in the winter, in the middle of the day, you do get a sea breeze, and so you will generate some power. On land, we know when it gets really hot in the summer, you don't generate much power.
And we know that there's been opposition, high-profile opposition, to a wind farm that's been in the works for a long time off the coast of Cape Cod, and it's met a lot of resistance.
It has. I think we have to look at that project as an isolated situation. The geography is really unique there. Nantucket Sound is surrounded not just by Cape Cod, but by two islands. And so you have a area in the middle of Cape Cod that's managed by the federal government, surrounded by state waters. And that's not going to repeat itself, you know, likely anywhere in the country.
Why, though, do you think offshore wind has been slower to take off than wind farms on land?
Well, it's certainly much more challenging. You've got not just wind forces on turbines, but you've got to account for wind and wave loading. The upfront capital costs are quite large. And so it becomes difficult to finance these, and we haven't really had long-term policies at the federal level in place to facilitate it. So in comparison, when Congress passed the Energy Policy Act of 2005, it provided for a 16-year planning horizon for nuclear power when it enacted a production tax credit. And the wind production tax credit is basically here 1 year, and then it stops, and then it starts again. And with something like offshore wind that has a long planning horizon, that makes it very difficult.
You need more consistency from the federal government.
You need more consistency and a longer-term vision.
How are we doing compared to other countries like China?
We've fallen behind China. We've fallen behind Japan. We're getting behind Vietnam and South Korea. So a number of the Asian countries are making progress on offshore wind. We are going to be putting in our first project off of Rhode Island, and it will be in the waters in 2016. It's a relatively small project of 5 wind turbines, but we are getting on the board. Europe, on the other hand, has got 8,000 megawatts.
And are we just talking about offshore wind or all wind projects right now?
I'm just talking about offshore wind. On land, China has at present the most installed capacity, but the United States generates the most power from wind. That's because a lot of Chinese turbines are not yet grid connected. They're up, but they're not connected to the grid.
I want to ask you one more question, and that is about the environmental impacts here, and especially when we're talking about offshore wind, the idea of birds and marine life being impacted by these. Has enough been done to address those concerns in your view?
Well, we do have 20 years of data from the Europeans. I think what we see mostly on birds, ultimately, it's going to be more an issue of habitat displacement than fatalities. The birds are perhaps smarter than we think. They can see these wind turbines a long way away and start to deflect. Marine mammals, we're going to need to do more study in the U.S., particularly with great whales. We know a lot about the installation impacts to whales and how to mitigate those. But we still don't know as much about the long-term consequences as we would like.
Jeremy Firestone, thank you so much.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Jeremy Firestone, a professor at the School of Marine Science and Policy at the University of Delaware. He's also director of the Center for Carbon-Free Power Integration there at the school.